Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this series, we take a look at CES 2018, who we visited, and what we liked. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren. Welcome back to the Hardware Asylum 2018 CES coverage. This is day four.
Woohoo!
If you haven't heard day one, two, and three yet, I urge you to go to hardwareasylum.com and click on those links. Listen up to that point. This is going to be basically a wrap-up of everything that we've seen and some of the stuff that we got to go check out actually on the show floor. Believe it or not, we went to CES, but we didn't really see CES until the last day.
And I'm sure only a small portion of it, really. Which is amazing. So much bigger than I expected.
You know, I was looking through some of the literature, and they were saying there was over 3,900 exhibitors this year.
Wow.
Covering, I'm going to have to fact check this, but this is like 2 million square feet of exhibit space.
Holy cow.
And that was across Las Vegas Convention Center, North, South, Central, well, South 1, 2, 3, 4, Central, Sands, Venetian, and Aria. Oh, and also the Las Vegas Hilton, which is right next door.
And that doesn't even count all the side stuff that we saw in the different vendor booths and all the suites.
Yeah, because that's technically not part of CES. That's why I call it the sideshow. It's something I mentioned before.
I honestly think, as a first-timer, we could have spent the entire week on the show floor and still not have covered all of the different things that were there to be seen, and that is something to say.
So let's get started. First of all, day four was what I call the free day. And that's where I can go to Las Vegas Convention Center and check out what happens to be there. And believe it or not, Inwin had a booth in South Hall.
Hey, so I liked the Inwin booth. It was out on the main display area. They had quite a few things that I hadn't seen before, but maybe they had, I think, some of the coolest custom builds that we'd seen. So they made up for not having as many by having at least a couple of them that were super cool, including, I think, my favorite case. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. So let's talk about their, I see you got the pictures up of their showstopper here, their award-winning case build.
Something that Darren may or may not be aware of is that Inwin, similar to Landley, always has a showcase case for every one of their shows. One year was the S-Frame, and then you had the H-Frame. And this year, we had a case that it's a round dome. It looked a lot like the capsule in Oblivion.
I thought this thing was amazing. The Winbot is what it was.
Yeah.
Now, this is one where the pictures have to be seen, but maybe don't do it justice because it's a clear plastic globe.
Yeah, and the artist that creates these... Yeah, he created the S-Frame and the H-Frame. They have a think tank at the Inwin factory where their job is to come up with new case designs. And this one was kind of cool because he modeled it after a human brain. So he had storage on one side and he had like creativity on the other side, which was like the motherboard side of it. But inside the case, it was segmented like that and it was a round dome piece, motorized. So the top actually would lift up and come back down. And it would spin around in circles.
Not only would it spin around in circles, but it had a motion tracker. So if you were walking around in front of it, it would track you. Now, of course, at CES, you got a lot of people walking around, so it wasn't working as well as it would in a standard environment. But there's something cool about having your computer follow you around the room that is, I don't know, unique. I'd never seen anything like it. And I'd never seen anything like the Clear Dome, so I can see why this won so many awards.
Yes. One of the other items, this is something that Darren was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. You need to buy like 12 of these.
I love it.
It was the Mars fan. And it doesn't really describe the fan so well, being Mars, but it's basically a positional case fan. So if you imagine a standard case fan, you know, it's flat. This one had three arms that came off of it, and it allowed you to position the fan blades in any direction position that you want.
You could even change whether it was a push fan or a pull fan without having to remove it from the mounting.
Yeah, you just flip it around,
basically. And as if that's not enough for you, it would sit by itself like a desk fan too. Yeah. All metallic construction, nice aluminum joiners, very cool looking fan. and USB controlled, of course.
Yes, of course. They had another fan too that had a metal frame and had the InWin logo embossed into the side of it.
Yeah, how is this not something everybody's doing? Because when you see the fans, you can't really see the blades or the center. That stuff's spinning, so why not brand the outside? This is kind of one of those no-brainer moments for me.
Yeah, and that fan also was one that allows you to do daisy chain LED.
Yes, also a clever idea.
Yeah, so in traditional, like the Thermaltake ring fans, for instance, they have the fan, and then there's a lead that comes off of it, and it has to go into a controller. And if you want to link more than five fans together, you have to link controllers together. This allows you to daisy chain the fan, so you still have a single controller, but you only have a single wire going into that controller. And then it hooks into fans that are down the loop.
Now, of course, InWin also had a lot of cases on display because they make a lot of cool cases.
Mm-hmm. One of the highlights, I didn't even get a picture of the name here, but it's a mini ITX chassis, and the top had a capacitive charging system that worked with my phone. I have a picture here where I put my phone on top of it, and it started charging.
Yeah, and why not? Because you've got that top service, and a lot of people use these smaller PCs as desktop units. Mm-hmm. So you got that service right there. The fact that they put a capacitive charger on that was kind of one of those cool no-brainer moments. Like, hey, we've got this service. What are we going to use it for? And if we don't have to put fans in it, why not a capacitive charger?
Yeah, and it was white, so Darren was drooling all over it.
White cases are making a comeback this year. Every major manufacturer had one. In fact, that kind of leads me to, I think, my favorite case of the entire show. And that's tough competition, so I'm not positive that I would say that every day.
Yeah. So basically, the case that he's speaking of is an enhancement or an upgrade to the 909.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is a case that we reviewed before. I think it was the smaller version of it. But mm-hmm. we have a completely thick aluminum surround. And inside there, you have some timber glass side panels. A spot down below, the controls are actually at the bottom of the case on the side. They're not on the front like you would see in a traditional case.
Yeah.
But this modified one had the InWin logo embossed into, well, actually not embossed, but cut into the front. And behind it was a custom water block distribution system.
Very nice. Now this lit up and it showed through the InWin logo on the front, now nice and large, so you could actually see the colored liquid moving through the logo. Yep. And this is through an all-aluminum case, nicely compartmentalized inside, lots of cooling options. Again, the full aluminum, but there's just something cool about integrating a custom water block into the design. That's the kind of thing that we would love to spend time with a Dremel or a laser cut making happen, and this is just built right into it. Now, I want to stress that they mentioned that this was a prototype and they were still working out the details, but this is headed for production this year.
Yes, and this is another high-end case that they will be offering. The block itself, the amazing thing about the block is that it doubles as a reservoir, but it allows you to just have straight tubes coming off of it to go to your various components. They have two runs at the top that go to a radiator. They have a couple runs below that that go to your CPU block, a couple runs below that that go to your video card, and all of it is integrated. It basically lets everything be flat because there should be themes when you're running your tubes. That's the standard that people have accepted these days.
Absolutely attractive. And of course, we have looked at these cases before. The quality is fantastic. The lines are very smooth. I think InWin, extremely successful. And, you know, maybe not the most innovative thing, but so cleanly carried out that I could not stop looking at that thing. The way the reservoir was implemented, I got to build in this thing. I've just got to.
Yeah. So after that, we had basically a free run of the show floor, and we went to see some various vendors. Sennheiser, for instance.
Yeah, you know, longtime listeners will know that I'm a huge Sennheiser fanatic. They make terrific products, one of the leaders in high-end audio, especially in the headphone market. So I wanted to check them out, and I'm glad I did because they had a couple of things going on. Now, of course, they have, you know, if you're into that sort of thing, their first new headphone design in years, the sequel to the Vaulted Premium 800 headset was the 820.
Dan remembers all these numbers.
It was a fantastic headset. Now, I got a chance to listen to it back-to-back with the 800 and the 800S, and it, they're amazing, but they're also extremely expensive, high-end Halo products. But that wasn't what really got me excited. There are a couple of things that got me excited. The first was that Sennheiser has a brand new line of professional gaming headsets. These are the GSP line. I believe it's GSP 600 and GSP 300?
500, I think.
Now, these two products were brand new. Oh, 500 and 600 products. Now, the interesting thing about these is they take the same microphone system that's been in it since the 373 and the Game 1 out there, which is considered one of the best microphones in the system, still has that lift-up mute. And they paired it with a much more gaming-looking headset. So the GSP 500 is based off the 500 series drivers that are out there in their home audio headphones, and the 600. So you get two different levels of speaker systems, and the 600 is the one that most people say is the go-to for the entry-level premium headphones. And they paired this with a new design system. Now, these are a little bit tighter clamping, a lot fancier looking. And I am really kind of excited to get these in there and see if the new GSP 600 dethrones the old 373 that's my go-to device and has been for years for gaming.
Yeah, it has a gaming look, too.
It really does. Now, these are redesigned. In the past, the gaming headphones have sort of looked like they've just taken an off-the-shelf audio headphone and just added a mic to it and called it a gaming headphone.
Yeah.
So these are a true redesign to match that gaming market. Now, whether or not they have that same vaulted sound that those headphones have in the audiophile line remains to be seen, but they seem to think so. Now, we didn't get a chance to listen to these because they were so new at the show that they weren't even hooked up.
Yeah, he had to go into a back room that, you know, one of the meeting rooms and say, oh, hey, yeah, this room has been busy all week, but it's free. I'm going to show you these things.
So absolutely fantastic, and definitely on my short list of headphones to check out. I've always been a big fan of the Sennheiser. They're a little brighter than some folks like and less bassy than the kids seem to like, but they're so clear that you have incredible advantages in gaming for surround sound, and that's true of a lot of premium headsets. Well, we didn't talk about some of the vendors we saw, but there were a lot of the premium headphone manufacturers that were getting into the gaming market this year. And I think we're going to see a lot more of what I would say is the upscale or premium gaming headphones, which to me is really attractive because in the past, I mean, we've had to sacrifice quite a bit when we bought gaming headphones to get the 7.1, to get the built-in microphone. You didn't. I mean, it was kind of a compromise in a lot of ways, and well, that's really changing.
Yeah, and the compromise really was not necessarily... Well, okay, the compromise suffered in the hardware because they were trying to reach a certain price point. It seems like gaming products in general, you know, it's a lower, it's a not necessarily lower class, but the people that are buying gaming hardware don't necessarily have a lot of money.
Yeah, so, the difference between gamers and audiophiles is shrinking, but it's still there.
Yep,
and I think we've talked about this in the past, but I mean, the price point for a good set of gaming headphones kind of seem to peak out in the mid 100, 150 range. And that doesn't really get you into an audiophile level headphone, but that line is blurring. But we also had a chance, or I had a chance at least, to check out some headphones that I'd be amiss if I didn't mention. And that's the Sennheiser Orpheus headphones.
That's the one that's like 50 grand, right?
These are widely marketed as the most expensive headphones on the market, period. Now, this is a revision of a previous Sennheiser premium headphone that was, 10 years ago, maybe for $19,000, which at the time seemed crazy. And I've forgotten the name because, frankly, nobody could afford them. They were for, you know, a very select few.
Well, and these ones were expensive because it was paired with an amp deck.
Absolutely. Now, I want to point out that you can buy more expensive headphones, but these are manufacturers that are putting diamonds and gold and stuff into them purely to drive the price up. These are hand-built, and what Dennis is talking about is the amp deck that comes with these is built out of a solid block of marble by hand and has eight tubes in it that are custom-tuned by hand and hand-selected specifically for the balanced output of these headphones. Now, these are...
Oh, and they move to protect them.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's some automation involved that you got to Google these things. Honestly, they wouldn't even let us take pictures of the animation because it's time-consuming and it requires some cool-down and warm-up to do. And I respect that because when you're looking at a $50,000 setup, even in a controlled environment, They're not going to let you touch it. No. So I got a chance to listen to these for just a few minutes and some songs. And I mean, honestly, I'm not maybe even the guy that's most qualified to tell you how good these are, because they were amazing, but it's hard to quantify at that level how much better a set of headphones that cost $50,000 with the amp deck are over their premium sets that are normally run around $1,600 to $2,000 range.
Yeah. So speaking of other stuff that's really, really super expensive, we ran over to Central Hall because that's where all the cool stuff is, right?
Yeah,
we walked through the Intel booth, which was huge, and I appreciated the fact that their carpet was really soft.
Oh, yay!
You know, it's really sad. You walk through the Intel booth, and it's like, there's no processors, no motherboards. It's all about, like, wearables and the drones and the data, and really soft carpet. But as we were walking through, we started heading out to Samsung, for instance. They had the Samsung City.
Oh, yeah, and that was huge. And I know there were several huge, but
yeah,
having gone for the first time to CES, it felt like a city block, which is insane.
It was, and every one of them, of the pavilions that was in there, because they had a whole big section set up here, each one was dedicated to, like, smart city stuff. You know, one of them had televisions. They had a television, a 4K television, I should mention, that was 12 feet across.
The wall. This year, the largest television on display, and every year CES has somebody that brings the largest television before. Now, LG's had this before, and we've had 108-inchers and, you know, stuff that today seems kind of close to normal. But this puppy, yeah, literally a wall of 4K television, crystal clear, beautiful. And, of course, they think this is the future, right? A whole wall for your TV.
Well, yeah, the demo that they had going was one of them was television, and then they also had it set up to where it looked like you were looking outside. And at 4K, I mean, that is pretty darn amazing. But it looked like you were looking out a window, and they had stuff moving around. It was really cool. And then they kicked over to a motorcycle race, which is one thing that I got a picture of. And then if you turn directly around, they had an 8K OLED display and showing the difference between 4K and 8K. I'm like, that's already pretty high resolution.
Oh, yeah.
But they had them side by side, and it's like, wow, the HDR rendering at 8K was just what blew me away there.
Well, and I think that we're all kind of aware that the future is driving to higher resolutions and faster response times and better syncing. But to see it in action is kind of like, well, I don't know. The sky's the limit on this stuff. How good can it get? I mean, when does the diminishing returns happen? Because, I mean, 4K looks fantastic, but then you look at 8K and you're just like, yeah, wow.
Yeah. What about LG in terms of wow?
Well, I think LG was interesting because LG had one of the many giant gaming monitors, but they also had, and not just one, but an amazing amount of paper-thin monitors.
Well, yeah, paper-thin televisions. These are the OLED designs.
And curved monitors, but, I mean, that's not even really the coolest part. I mean, what was the cool thing there?
It was the Canyon.
Oh, my gosh.
The Canyon of televisions. Okay, so these were custom-made curved panels designed for a walkthrough Canyon. And I mean Canyon because they were stacked 6 tall.
Yeah, it was about 3 stories tall.
And each one of them was curved differently. They weren't curved the same. And they were positioned in such that you had to walk around. So if you're looking at it from any one direction, you didn't see the end.
And they, of course, paired that with the Dolby Atmos. So you get this amazing surround sound as you're walking through. It's, I don't know, maybe not even a 2-minute demo. But
yeah,
these things were impressive, giant. And somebody said there were over 100 TVs. I didn't actually get the exact number, but it wouldn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. So
I took a video of it as we were walking through, and it was really amazing. Partially just because of the fact that they could span the video all the way across the entirety of the canyon.
Talk about disappearing bezels. I mean, with that many TVs around you, it was like you were there. It really was. I mean, people were clapping and cheering at the end of the demo. And, I mean, this really talks about the future of TVs with custom builds and custom shaping as the future. I mean, I don't know what the shape of TVs is going to be like. We're already getting used to curved TVs, but I mean, this could be, you know, the shape of your room, for example.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we didn't get a lot of time to spend in those halls for, you know, looking around, because there was a lot to see. And you would almost get lost going from Samsung to LG. That's clear across Central Hall. It's already a pretty big place, but you're walking by 12 different vendors who also have pretty big booths. And one thing about walking around these halls, you know, because wandering's the best way, really. I mean, you could have an agenda and you may not actually make your entire agenda because of how many people are there. And you're walking by and say, hey, what the heck is that? And the one for me was Motobot. And believe it or not, this was back in South Hall when we were trying to gush through to after lunch to go to our Silverstone meeting. But Motobot was basically a drone that was attached to a Yamaha motorcycle with the sole intent of being faster than a human.
Yeah, and that doesn't even really do it justice because they've built this robot loosely in the same shape of a human. And I get that that might be something to do with the weight distribution and the controls of the motorcycle.
I think it's the controls of the motorcycle.
But, also. I mean, we're talking Tron level cool. I mean, this thing was slick and neat. And, I mean, it just didn't even look like it could be real. But it was real.
It was. And I even found the video. I'll link it in the show notes. But they've been working on this for 3 years, okay? And the idea was to create a drone or a bot that could ride a motorcycle. And then they say, well, what's the limit? Well, we'll just make it go really fast, right? So they set out to have Valentino Rossi, who is a GP world champion, set a timed lap on a 2 mile course at 85 seconds. And then they set the bot out to try to beat it. Didn't quite beat it, but he made it in 117 seconds. And as you're looking, where was he slow? Because he was faster in the straights, but then slower in the corners. And that was all because humans are able to move around on the motorcycle, whereas this robot was not. The robot was stuck. So he was not able to actually slide on the motorcycle and actually be more aggressive in the corners without upsetting the motorcycle balance.
So all about experience, of course, because, mm-hmm. you know, Rossi's got this amazing amount of time and talent, but also about the intuitive movement of the body on the bike, which they still can't echo in something like a robot.
No. And in the video, they even talk about how in every second, there's an infinite number of decisions and the robot, the robot voice was basically saying, so how does the human know which one to pick? And in a lot of cases, it's experience, the fact that you've done it before. And, you know, for a racer, once you get familiar with the track, you know what you need to do at certain times, and you start to actually just mimic that each time you do it.
I can't get over how cool this was to see a robot racing at 200 plus miles an hour on a freaking motorcycle.
Actually, it was kilometers an hour, but pretty darn close.
Was it kilometers? But still, yeah. Oh my gosh. Fast. And I mean, literally, I mean, it doesn't sound like it was close when you talk about the seconds, but that's not much time at all for 2 miles.
No, that's not at all. And I want to say that it was probably all in the corners because, you know, Rossi was able to slide off the bike and actually change the center of gravity and be able to go faster around the corners. But the robot, you know, he's going to be more aerodynamic than a human, and he's going to go a lot faster.
Well, you know, they're still keeping at it, and the next generation and the next run's going to get faster and faster, and we may see a time when these robots are faster. Now, that's not the only off-site thing we saw, because we did see also a autonomous F1 racing car.
Yeah, I think it was F1. But yeah, that was at the NVIDIA booth, and it was completely autonomous. But the big thing that Jensen was talking about in the keynotes that for NVIDIA was all automotive. So they're using a lot of the V1000, I think, you know, the new GPU,
right,
is powering their AI so that they can have self-driving cars. And now they have a self-driving race car.
Now, this was really impressive to me because it looked alien, actually, in the way that it processed air. And of course, you know, airflow is the primary factor once these cars hit a certain level, how well they control the air, the downforce, the cornering, and of course, the grip on the ground. And I know, Dennis, we talked quite a bit about this, but one of the fun things about going to CES is what?
Oh.
The cars.
Yeah, I always make a point to go through North Hall, because North Hall is where all the automotive technology is located. Incidentally, that's where NVIDIA was located. You mm-hmm. would think that they would be somewhere else, but North Hall was it. And I go there mostly because I like car stereo. I was a car stereo enthusiast, as people of the podcast will know. So I stop by Orion, I stop by Pioneer, and they always have cars on display. And one of the first ones we saw was at the Mercedes booth, and they had this Mercedes race car. I'm like, God, this thing was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, stunning. Now, you know, these are purpose-built cars, of course, But this was so beautiful. And you see so many different cars there. And to me, that's some of the attraction. I mean, we're all kids at heart, right? We like stereos. We like cars. We like, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And we don't get a chance to write about it, of course, because it's not our primary function. But the technology that's involved in these things is also amazing. I mean, even just the advances in car stereo stuff is crazy.
Yeah. They had a Blazer that had been all customized. And I think this is the first time Darren had seen a car on hydros.
Nah.
It actually had pumps in the back that were all like polished up and everything. And this was an immaculate show truck with subs in the back, of course, obviously, because it was at a stereo booth. We have, I think this was the Acura.
Oh, no, that's the new Fisker. Now,
Fisker.
Fisker hasn't really been in the news lately because Tesla has been the most successful electronic sports car. But Fisker is back with a new car, very sleek and sexy. And I have to admit, I'm curious to see, you know, if they're going to become a competitor again because their initial designs were so brilliant, but the company just had so many issues, it never took off.
Yeah. In all of the CESs that I've been to, there's always been an electric car or a hybrid car. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the Chevy Volt of all cars listed there.
Right.
But yeah, I'm going to post a link to the gallery of the cars of CES. It'll be on the Facebook page most likely. But yeah, we have a red Camaro. Pretty darn awesome. I didn't want to sit down in it. Oh, and then, of course, the Orion demo truck was there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What a Goliath. So big, so many speakers. I'd have liked to have maybe given them a chance to flex it a little bit, but they couldn't do that in the showroom space, and you'll see why when you see the pictures of it. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and then I got to stand next to a new Competition HCCA speaker that literally is 3 feet tall.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Maybe 2 feet.
I don't even know what it weighs, but, I mean, the magnet on that was about as big as I am, it seemed like.
Yeah, well, they have them hanging from an engine hoist, so go figure, right? Let's see. Oh yeah. The amplifiers in that Orion demo truck, at least 4 feet long. There's some of the, I think these are the 3000 watts or something like that. They're, I don't know. They're huge.
There's the new Acura NSX.
Yeah. It's all black and beautiful. And the license plate is 8 and 209, which probably means something, but
yeah, it was definitely a show car. Someone had loaned them and it was beautiful black on black.
Yeah, Boss 302 Mustang. Ironically, we had a Mustang as a rental car, so this obviously had to come up.
Oh, yeah. And Dennis and I, a lot of history with Mustangs. You hear come out sometimes in the podcast. We've both been owners and fans.
Yeah, there was a clone of the GT40 or the 4GT that was a purpose-built race car based off of that same chassis design.
Yeah, gorgeous. My lovely daughter amused by the chameleonish purple with the magnesium wheels,
which had stretched tires on it, so obviously they were trying to make it low as possible. Also, really, it's going to be damaging to the wheels.
Yeah, that thing is
but I don't think that this particular one gets out to race very often. It's mostly just for show.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah. And then there was a couple of other like electric cars that were on display. We saw an SUV that was made in China, which I think is correct, but it looks pretty cool. And then we saw a couple of like electric commuter cars that were really trikes, two wheels up front, one wheel in the back. They had an 80 mile an hour top speed and a 200 mile range.
Yeah, in fact, one of these kind of reminded me of the old Porsche 356. It had a similar roundish shape, although a trike.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with the performance, the battery life, and the fact that it was under $10,000 out the door.
Yeah, that's insane, especially if you get a little commuter car like that. But this was also in kind of the, I'm going to call it the offshore sort of exhibits.
More speculative, right?
Right. So in European countries and Asian countries, there is a growing need for very small, nimble cars. And those are perfect for that sort of environment, you know, the little fit cars and stuff like that. Not so much in the United States, unless you live in a large metropolitan area. But a lot of times, if you live in that metropolitan area, you use public transport. You don't necessarily need a car.
So there were a lot of these little electric cars, and I hesitate to call this the wave of the future, but I can see huge growth in that market because they're licensed like motorcycles, so they're cheaper. They don't have the same emission values. Now, there is a little bit of question about how safe they are, of course.
Of course.
And how long they last, but a couple of these in particular were touting that you could charge them off a regular house plug in less than 3 hours. So definitely doable as a computer-driven car or a high-tech car, if you will, at a low cost point.
Well, we hope you enjoyed our CES 2018 coverage. We did something a little different this time, mostly releasing the podcast late, and also we're breaking it up into four different segments. So I urge you to check out day 1, 2, and 3, along with day 4. And if you have any comments, questions, drop us a line at podcast@hardwaresound.com. For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwaresound.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2018. Thanks for listening.